Welcome to Heels in the Courtroom, a podcast about successfully navigating law and life, featuring the women trial attorneys at the Simon Law Firm.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Heels in the Courtroom. This is Mary Simon, and we are picking up where we left off from our discussion on mentors with John Simon and Eric Feith. So this will be part two, a continued discussion on mentorship.
I'd like to say a word about imposter syndrome, because there's a moment where you graduated, you haven't done anything as a lawyer yet. So the next thing you're going to do, you've never done. Not in real life. You might have done it in a classroom, but you haven't done it. And I think that's a big part of being a mentor or being mentored, is that it's somebody who can tell you, you can do it, get in there, do the thing you haven't yet done.
Yeah.
And you gotta, you know, and John, it even scales up at the firm. I remember we had things come in where I would come to you and say, hey, here's this thing. Is this something we do? And you said, we're trial lawyers. So yeah, we do it. And now we plug in the substantive law, let's do it. And there was this hesitancy by me and thinking, well, I got it. But then the answer is go study it, go research it, go talk to other lawyers who do these things. We have the tools for doing things we have never done. And I'm sure you still have, to this day, you have new cases coming in where you haven't yet handled something quite like that. And that's what we do. So anyway, being a mentor, I think, is almost, it's like an antidote to the imposter syndrome or that hesitancy that I'm about to do something I'm not completely comfortable with. And I find that mentors through my life have always said, give it a try. You know, that's how you learn. You know, you figure it out. What's the worst that can happen?
There was a law student who asked me before how to get a mentor, or who do you pick as your mentor? And a lot of the stuff that I'm hearing from you, Eric, and also Dad, is there things that you don't have to feel like you need to go ask someone, will you be my mentor? You just touch base with the same person over and over and kind of, you know, get together with them, go, if you work at the same office with them, go shadow them for a deposition or when they go to court. And the mentors that I have in my life, I've told them they are my mentors. I consider you a mentor. I've said that to people. And it's not something that I need to ask them, because they are, whether or not they like it or not. They're people that I look up to and get advice from. So you don't have to make it this rigid thing where you're asking someone to do it. It can just happen kind of organically.
We're all talking about people who took the time to teach us and mentor us. What about those of us who are able to mentor somebody else? I think the best way to become a mentor is to reach out to people and ask them questions and meet them and talk to them. Somebody comes back from a deposition. You know, I was at a deposition as a very young lawyer, and I got done with the deposition, and the other lawyer who I had met for the first time said, hey, you got some time, let's go have a cup of coffee. And we did. And he was maybe 10, 15 years older than me, maybe a little older than that. But we developed a, you know, pretty good relationship over the years, had other cases where we were against each other. And it just was, you know, it was just kind of neat, you know, reaching out like that. I've tried to do that, but a lot of times it's meeting some of the younger lawyers on cases and talking to them or pulling them out and so forth.
And I also think it is just a matter of reaching out. I think if you want to be a mentor, and it's good to do that. I think it only increases your own practice and your own career if you take the opportunity to mentor others. It's almost like accountability a little bit if you're going to reach out to someone and see it through. I have a friend who I will review her resumes. I'll talk to her before she goes and interviews at firms. We'll touch base every couple months on the phone. We don't live in the same state. So every couple months we'll touch base on the phone, and she'll kind of run through questions that she'll have about where she works or professional relationships, or even negotiating, going into a new job and negotiating salary. Or, you know, we'll just have conversations of, hey, should I say this? Should I not say this? In your experience, how does this play out? And those are conversations that I check in with her as well. So I think in order to be a mentor, you really need to let the person know that you're not only there to help them however they need to, but also check in with them on the things you are helping with. We will have law clerks, former law clerks, reach out to us and say, hey, I'm interviewing at this firm. Do you know anyone who works there? You know, you can send back an email and say, yeah, they're fantastic. You know, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to pick up the phone, call the student or the clerk who's talking to you, explain what your relationship is with that other firm, what you know about that firm, ask them when the interview is, then connect with the law firm that they're going to go interview at. Let them know that you have made that connection. Follow up with them afterwards and see how it went. You know, you have to think about all the things that we love about our mentors and be that for somebody else. And it's kind of one of those things where they're going to pick up that you have an interest in their success. And I think that just goes a really long way.
For instance, at St. Louis University, I teach as an adjunct too. I also mentor a young woman in Chicago. It's through an organization that they assign people to young people who might need a mentor. And those are nice because they fix you up with someone
sure.
who's looking for this kind of thing.
Guidance.
And the secret weapon is listening. It's really hard to do sometimes because we know so much, we've been through so much, we have all kinds of stories, but I really enjoy where I remind myself, don't talk so much, just ask them a few questions and then listen to them. They chew through it while you're listening. They are figuring it out as you go with very little input by you sometimes.
Right.
And that's one of the best parts of teaching is to get the conversation going in class
where they're
talking to each other, trying to figure what just happened here. Oh, there's a conflict of interest. Oh, what do we do about it? And how do we proceed? And you can hear the gears clinking in their heads, and it's wonderful. So I would just add that that's part of the toolkit is to sometimes not be just ready to, throw all these great ideas at them, but also to remember to cool it sometimes and let them do their thing.
It's mentoring is not about problem solving for somebody else. It's empowering someone else to do their own problem solving. Is that kind of what it comes down to, is being able to be that sounding board and putting it back on them.
Some of the best moments in the civil trial practice class is to share a story where something went wrong. I mean, they'll listen to me talk about how to do something. Here, you do A, B, C, get this done right. But when you're saying, one time I had a case where it didn't go well, we tried it, we lost the case, things got messed up. They're all listening. I mean, it's just like there is no better way to get everybody staring straight at you going, tell me what happened. I don't want
this to was this. Horrible. Get this. Yeah, then they're all going to be listening. It was interesting listening to some of the stuff that my dad was talking about with George being his mentor. Clearly, in some respect, I'm a descendant of the George Fitzsimmons mentorship because some of that kind of trickles down. I'm assuming that the folks who are listening to this podcast are, that a lot of them probably have more years on me practicing law, but can probably appreciate some of the biggest, most helpful feedback that I've gotten from my dad as my mentor is don't let the highs get too high and don't let the lows get too low. That has really, kept me to be able to be resilient and persevere through cases. Another one that is a lesson that is hard learned is the week before trial does not belong to you. Period. That's it. It just doesn't. And if anyone who's listening to this podcast, hasn't experienced that yet, you will. I'll just say you will. And another one that I really, really appreciate is that preparation is the great equalizer. I remember when my dad told me that when I first started practicing, one of the benefits of working at this office is that you are given cases and expected to handle them. And it does not matter whether or not you go into the courtroom and you're the youngest attorney by 10 years. It doesn't matter. It's just about preparation, and preparation is the great equalizer. And that has really had a fantastic impact on me and my career so far, of just knowing that there's no amount of experience that can stop me from being prepared in any circumstance.
Mary, I would add a couple John-isms, I guess that's what you can call them.
Yeah, these are they're mentor-isms of John Simon.
And one is the best cure for anxiety is hard work.
Yes.
It's all about relationships. I've heard that, and I've seen it in action. One more, and this is not something, John, that you told me, but we do it here at this firm, is always be upbeat and optimistic when you go in the room, and you know you're about to walk into a hornet's nest. There's a lot of tension there, a lot of money at stake, and people worried. It's a, it's a carnival of anxiety. Just go in happy. It's like every time, just go in and shake hands. Hey, how you doing? Just you take the lead, set the tone, and it's always the best approach for every situation.
I think I was maybe 2 years out from law school. And I remember going to a deposition with my dad, and there were, it was a Med-Mal case. And, you know, the other side has probably like 20 experts, and we're on our way to take this deposition, and it's a couple hours out of town. And I knew in my head that there was going to be all this feedback from the other attorney about scheduling and future arguments and all these issues that were going to be taken up and all this stuff. And I remember my dad telling me on the way, I was like, hey, just so you know, he's going to ask about this and he's going to ask about this. And we've been emailing back and forth. And I remember my dad telling me, save your arguments for the judge. You going back and forth with him over email, it is doing nothing for you other than taking your time. Just stop and say, I'll be happy to take it up with the judge. Save your arguments for the court. In other words, don't get into little mini battles with folks that just, you don't need to be doing it. And we showed up to the deposition, and deposition went great. I'm sitting there and, you know, the deposition's coming to an end. We're leaving. And I think it was around Thanksgiving or something. And we were leaving and the other attorney approaches me after the deposition ended and was like, hey, Mary, we've been talking about this motion and I'm going to have an issue with these things. And this is what I'm going to file. And this is what I'm going to do. And my dad, and I knew that was going to happen. And I didn't know how to not get into it with the guy. And my dad just went, you know what? Why don't you just relax, have a good Thanksgiving with your family. Tell your family I said happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the holiday. We'll just regroup and talk about it later. No problem. And he went, well, okay, John, I'll see you later. And we left. And I was like, all right, that's how that's done. Yes. And I learned so much because it diffuses moments where you are arguing about something that you don't have to be arguing about. Sitting there for another hour talking about motions that might be filed, you know, 6 months from now, that is not something that we have the benefit of time on our hands to be doing. So it was a great lesson learned, and I've used that later. I just had an opportunity to try a case with my dad a couple weeks ago in St. Louis County, and the other attorney would email me all the time, and I got to a point about 6 months into the case that went on for quite some time, I would just email back and say, thank you. And that's all I would say.
So
yeah, I've read it, I've acknowledged it, but there's nothing I can possibly say in this moment that would be productive to me or my client. And those are going to be my focus. So I would just say, thank you for the message.
So again, I would say a lot of being a mentor is showing, not telling.
Yeah.
And so what you saw, though, was an artful deflection, because he wanted to talk about that thing, about
Correct.
X. And John came in with his happy optimism.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you know, it's like, it's pretty clever. And it worked, and it saved time.
I was actually trying to wish him a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right.
I take it all back.
Yeah. No, 100%, but it's saving arguments for the court is such a, it in a being a plaintiff's attorney, time.
How often do you ever change somebody's mind?
Oh, my gosh.
And but the time, actually, if you're going to talk about it, the time to talk about it is when you're standing in the courtroom.
To the judge.
In front of the judge.
Yeah,
then that's
right.
The time to talk about it.
But the,
right.
the happy Thanksgiving was so much better than just saying, save it for the judge, which would have been a killer.
And the message is never save it for the judge. It's, thank you so much. I hear it sounds like you're really concerned about that. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. See you at the next deposition. And that is such a productivity and time saver for us. And it also just keeps us, the focus is the client and what's best for the client, getting the client from A to B, and me emailing 30 minutes back and forth with a lawyer about a motion that he's thinking about filing in the next couple of weeks is not something that I need to be doing. And I wouldn't have done that had I not had that experience with my dad.
So one thing I want to open up as another version of this topic. When I worked for you for 10 years, one of the best things looking back is the clerk program. And there, you know, it's somewhere between formal and informal mentorship. It's like, here they are, they're here to learn. John, could you talk a little bit about why that became such an important, prominent part of your firm, is to have this rather large group of clerks come and work with the lawyers?
Well, I mean, obviously the practical side is that we get help. You have a law clerk. But the flip side, too, was, You know, we have 12 law clerks usually. Each attorney pretty much has their own law clerk. And what I've always wanted to do is make it a kind of a two-way street. I mean, we get work and productivity from the law clerks, but I always tell them, the clerks, when they get here the first day or when I meet them, you know, the flip side is you're gonna get out of this what you put into it. And if you just sit in your office or the cubicle or whatever and do research, you're not going to get as much as you would going out, you know, attending depositions, attending motions. Even if the lawyer you're working for doesn't have something that week, find out what's going on in the office. If we have a trial, you know, be there for opening. We're going to watch some of the cross-examination. And the really cool thing about it is I can't tell you the number of former law clerks we've had that have come through here, but it's well over 200. It's well over. It's probably more like 250 to 300 law clerks. And, you know, there are former law clerks of mine and this firm who are judges, managing partners at, you know, firms around town. When I see them 1 year later or two or five or 10 or 15, you know, I'd like to smile and shake their hand. And,
right.
You know, have something, you know, to feel good about it. And I think the clerks have a pretty good, you know, we try to make it a good experience. I think most of the students that come out of law school, especially the ones in the top part of the class, you know, hardly any of them go do plaintiff stuff. You know, they all go to the big defense firms because that's where they get the most money. And it's an economic thing. I get it. I understand. And, you know, they don't see the other side of the civil practice, you know, and so we get some terrific, terrific law clerks. I mean, top of the class, and they know coming in, it isn't a full-time gig. You know, there's not a full-time job waiting for you. I think they start in their second year and work till the end of their third year. So it's about a year and a half or so, and they'll work full-time during the summer and part-time during the school year. It's really something that a lot of those law clerks have come back later and you know, after they've gone to work for a defense firm for 4 or 5 years, end up going to do plaintiff stuff, you know, and actually we've rehired 3 or 4 of our law clerks. You know, I think 3 or 4 of the attorneys who work here are our law clerks, but they didn't start right out of school. They went and worked somewhere else. And then when we had a slot to fill, we went back and actually, you know, called them and talked to them because we knew them. But it's neat. It's a real cool vibe. It's I think it makes things a little more energetic around here. And I love, watching the law clerks learn, challenging them, pushing them, you know, with our trial. You know, typically when we try a case, opening statement, close, or whatever, we'll see almost all the law clerks from the firm, you know, sitting in the back of the courtroom. And so we certainly get a lot out of them, and I just hope that you know, they get as much or more from, you know, from their experience.
Yeah, and it's built in, whether it's formal or informal mentorship. I can't think of a time where one of the law clerks who I've worked with hasn't reached out to me. I'm in regular communication with any clerk who's ever worked with me, and I like to think that has some reflection of their experience at this office, of knowing that the door's still open for them to reach out. And it just really is a good program, and we have a conscious effort here of letting the clerks know if there is something that you want to be doing, or any type of work that you want to be getting involved with, say the word. We've got the work.
We do a lot of in-house seminars here. When we have a case going out and we want to do the opening, we will literally, you know, the room, as you know, the conference room, you know, that we have seats 50 people or so, 60 people, and we'll present it to not just the staff, but the law clerks, and get everybody's feedback and make changes based on that. And, you know, we got some pretty harsh critics here.
Right.
So, and that's all part of it too. I mean, I would like to think in a small way that we're, you know, help developing, you know, the next generation of really, really good lawyers.
It keeps us learning too, to teach. You know, we think about teaching and helping, but every time you're in a good discussion with somebody you're supposedly teaching, you're learning too. You're rehashing things, and you're questioning yourself as you know, hearing the words come out of your mouth, and then you're stopping and going, yeah, but then again, this, and it's a reciprocal process.
Yeah.
Benefits going both ways.
I remember leaving a deposition, and my clerk asked me, why didn't you ask him more about, you know, whatever the topic was? And I just, it does kind of put it back on you to think, how do I explain why I didn't need to ask six more questions about something after getting, you know, an admission? But it's nice to have that. It always keeps you on your toes, always keeps you thinking. You got to be, you know, be able to explain that to someone who's learning, because they are sitting there wondering, why didn't you ask these next couple questions?
And, you know, think about how much of what we do is learned on the job. I think 90% of what we do day to day is learning on the job.
Probably more, yeah.
You know, when you get that law degree, I mean, you need it and it's valuable, and, you know, you can't do what we do without it. But if that's all you have, I mean, think day one, what you really know how to do. Not much, unless you've, you know, clerked somewhere or watched. And for me, when I first started out, I would watch lawyers all the time. I would go up to argue a motion or file something in the courthouse, and I would go in other courtrooms and watch. And I didn't know exactly why, but one of the attorneys would be like very, very good, very effective, and I knew it immediately. And the other one, not so effective. And what really intrigued me was why. You know, what is it? I couldn't pinpoint it at the time, but I knew, look, there's a way to do this that's really, really good and effective. And there's another way that ain't so hot, okay? And whatever that real good way is, I need to figure that out and learn more about it. And I was trying cases with lawyers on my side, you know, like to help be the second or third chair. And we'd be up against some really good plaintiff's lawyers when I was doing defense stuff. And I remember taking like notes from what the plaintiff lawyer was doing, you know. It just seemed way, way more effective, you know. But it's all learned, and you learn it by fumbling and stumbling through it by yourself and making a lot of mistakes. Or you learn it by watching somebody who's knows how to do it and is willing to take the time to talk to you about it. And I think that's the definition of what a mentor is.
Well, thanks so much, you guys, for another fantastic discussion on mentorship. That wraps this up on part two. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Heels in the Courtroom. Remember, our episodes drop every other Wednesday. And if you have any comments or questions, please feel free to reach out to us at comments@heelsinthecourtroom.law. See you next time.
Heels in the Courtroom is brought to you by the Simon Law Firm. At the Simon Law Firm PC, we believe in the power of pooling resources in order to create powerful results. We often lend our trial skills and experience to lawyers around the country to achieve better results for their clients. Our attorneys welcome the opportunity to work with you on your case, offering vast resources, seasoned litigators, and a sterling reputation. You can contact us at 314-241-2929. And if you enjoyed the podcast, feel free to share your thoughts with Amy, Liz, Erica, Mary, Elizabeth at heelsinthecourtroom.law. And subscribe today, because the best lawyers never stop learning.